this is part two of episode 200. If you didn't check out part one, give it a listen. We did a dealer's choice. It's like random questions that we had for each other that we made each other answer. So give that a listen and then come join us for part two.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Are we doing hot takes? Is it time for hot takes?
Let's do some hot takes.
Sure, is this another list I'm gonna start?
Let's take some hot things.
Yeah. We're going to do top three hot takes.
Top three?
Not five, just in case they're too hot.
Wow.
So Kyle, what's your...
Holy moly.
What's your number three hot take?
My number three hot take is that ketchup is the worst condiment.
Hear, hear.
Oh, man. It is... If ketchup just disappeared, I don't think I'd miss it.
I definitely would not miss it.
It's...
Yeah. I don't know. The only thing I'd be worried about would be fries.
Yeah,
you can have mayonnaise on fries.
Or ranch. Or barbecue sauce.
Yeah, ranch is...
Cocktail sauce.
Oh, I would like to try
just
that.
Just straight up mayonnaise. I'd dip some french fries in mayonnaise all day.
I would like to try that, too. It's not helping the weight loss program.
My next one is that I don't think the Shining is that...
I thought we're doing round robin.
Oh, fine.
We're circle bird.
Yeah.
Thamo, what's your next? What's your first one?
Firefly was okay. It wasn't bad. It was okay. And the way buttered noodles or toast is okay.
I feel like that's actually a lot higher up than you used to describe it. Like, you didn't...
I thought you straight up disliked
it.
No, it's okay. I mean, it's good. There's a cohesive plot. It's all right.
A terrible take.
Alan Tudyk is great.
Do you think that show could have lasted much longer than what it did?
I'm kind of glad it didn't. Like,
yeah.
How many shows have you seen that just became terrible?
Yeah. We were just talking about Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, just let some things be good.
Yeah.
But that show really should have had a second season, I think.
It was only on for one season.
It was only on for one season. I think it could have done more of a second.
Just let something be acceptable.
Mm. All right, then.
Eva?
It's like the opposite of hot takes, though. We're supposed to be like staunchly like fuck ketchup.
Yeah.
And then
ketchup like, is the worst.
And Kyle and I are like, let's get rid of ketchup completely.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, we can have like a more nuanced view of Firefly.
I don't like confrontation.
We know.
Oh, man.
We know. So I wanted to complain about the pornography of food writing. Like, this, you know, anything that has a recipe, I gotta read like 850 words ahead of time, man. About your stupid kid or your shopping trip or what you saw at the farmer's market.
So true.
I saw an incredible meme about
on that. And on and on. Like, the New Yorker even did like a fake article about it that had no recipe at the end of it. And it was perfect. And what I love about it, it's totally unnecessary. Yeah. And it's to appeal to people who aren't trying to cook anything. They can just read this and go, oh, this was pleasant. And then they're like, never actually going to do it.
Who's reading a recipe for like the pleasure and not for...
Well, that's why I'm comparing it to pornography, where we indulge in things that are fun to think about, but we're never actually going to do.
It's like reading an IKEA instruction manual. Like, yeah, let me just peruse this manual. I don't have... That bookend, but not a bookend, bookshelf. A bookend. I don't think you need to build a bookend.
But I love it because then I'll get a text message from my dad that's just like enough characters that fit into a text message, like 160 characters, where he could do like a whole recipe.
Nice.
And that's it. I'm like, okay, that's all I needed.
It's got to be something with... like search engine optimization. It's got to be something with that.
Word count or something.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's just to make it appealing to a wider group of people.
Maybe.
People who like photography, people who like reading somebody else's adventure.
I don't mind the photos, but the personal stories about where they got this recipe and how it saved someone's life when they ate it. It's like, I don't care.
I would love to have a whole website of like it starts off, let's get one thing clear. I have murdered. Just the darkest.
I think a hot take would be that you enjoy reading those stories.
Somebody has to.
It's a cold take because those are the worst.
Yeah.
Somebody likes
it,
though.
Or a hot take would be like...
Because it's profitable.
I enjoy clicking through a top 20 list on...
Yeah.
Oh, give me a slideshow.
Yeah.
I want to click 19 times to get to number one on this top 20 list.
Well, you generated a lot of ad revenue for that. And that's what this is about. You're up, Nick.
It's all about getting that paper. This was going to be my number one, but since we're talking about like complaining about criticism,
a lot of mine were like, I hate. I wanted to. I guess mine are
I'm gonna
all
go
pretty
with,
negative.
I'm going to go with something I hate about the way people criticize film, and it's a twofer. One is complaining about plot holes. Like sometimes plot holes are bad. Like if it's character motivation that doesn't make sense. That's not even a plot hole, though. That's just like a poorly written character. But if people are complaining about like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who will say, oh, like the stars wouldn't have been in this time or in this area at this time of year in this part of the hemisphere. Like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a documentary.
Like, is he that insecure in his own knowledge base that he needs to...
That's an extreme example. Even like small plot holes. I'm just like... It's a work of fiction. It's a movie. Like, calm down. That's not a reason that this minor plot hole is not a reason that the movie is bad. The movie can be bad for a million other reasons. Which brings me to my second point is, I don't like when people will judge a movie based or criticize a movie and totally write it off based on the content of the movie. Like if,
huh?
Like what do you mean?
So, what does that leave?
So the content as in like the IMDb plot summary or if there's like a certain like social or cultural element that they don't like, they write everything else off. And I'm going to go to the most extreme example of this, which is a movie that is actually bad in a tangible way. So Triumph of the Will. It is a documentary made by Leni Riefenstahl. It's Nazi propaganda.
Oh.
It's about like,
bad.
It's about Hitler's rallies.
Okay.
It's a film about a rally.
Yeah, it's a film.
I've heard of it.
It's literally bad. It caused harm, at least in some theoretical and probably actual way. By probably actual, I mean that this worked as propaganda. Obviously, Hitler did bad things. I'm saying that this probably also made his power easier to. For him to latch onto power.
It certainly didn't harm anything that he was already... It didn't hinder anything he was doing.
Right. It was at worst neutral in terms of that stuff. And it probably helped sway a lot of people to his side. Because it's it shows him as like a grandiose, enthusiastic and dynamic leader. So that's bad. Just in terms of moral whatever. But I think there's a lot of people who will say, I would never watch that. It's bad. And I think that's fine to say for oneself that, like, I'm never going to watch that. I just can't sit through it. And that's okay. Mm. But I think where a lot of people are going too far is that they'll say, I don't think anyone should watch that. And I think that's a problem. Because, one, just because it's bad and it's made by bad people and they're doing and it's supporting bad things doesn't mean that it doesn't have some kind of aesthetic value.
And that's the thing that when people want to be like Riefenstahl apologists, they want to talk about, well, it's a beautifully constructed film. You know, it's effective as propaganda because of the way that she staged these things and the way that it's shot. And
Yeah. So my point is that we can hold both thoughts in our head at the same time. We can see how that this has been used to influence other films. Star Wars, lot of the shots of the Imperial Army,
big crowd scenes.
Yeah, I think even like more recently, the last season of Game of Thrones used what seemed very clearly to be Riefenstahl imagery.
Where,
like after Daenerys, episodes after Daenerys takes over, Sir's back, so we're gonna give him his hot take after I'm done with mine. So I think we can hold. I think
you haven't missed anything.
Yeah. So I think you should be able to hold both thoughts in your head at once. Where it's a bad movie from a moral point of view, but know that it still has some either aesthetic or historical value. And the historical value is that for something like that specifically, other people are going to watch it. The bad people are going to watch it, yeah. And they're going to learn things from it. If every person who's good
doesn't watch it,
then that side of the fight is missing out.
Would you mind if I jumped in? Because I think just to add to what you're saying, I think maybe the biggest value though would be psychological information, like how did this evil thing happen, and how did this ball of evil do what he did?
I think a lot of people though, when they have you seen Triumph of the Will?
No.
I think there's a lot of people who want, when they watch Triumph of the Will, to see like Hitler like screaming and like a lot of like really like overt like violence, and it's really a lot of like men exercising and men marching.
Well, now I'm interested to see how I can change my body habitus.
A feeling of, I mean, at least when I was a youngin who wanted to see it, I was like, this is not what I was expecting.
Yeah,
it's not what I thought it was going to be.
But it's something that I've watched, and I'm glad I've watched it, but it's not a movie that I admire, because it's...
Well, that's a good point, though, that it's not a movie that showed him yelling and looking like a crazy person, but rather was showing... I assume these were not fat people exercising, but rather idealized. Anyhow.
And then sort of, like, tangentially related to the same thought, with a less extreme example, is that a lot of people disliked the last season of Game of Thrones, and particularly where the Daenerys arc led at the end. And we talked about this on our show, where if you're only looking at that show from one lens, the feminist lens, then I think that's a bad character arc. But if you're looking at it from the lens of characters' treatment of race and class, then it's a great metaphor. So I think that people limit their scope of how they're viewing things and aren't willing to look at things from multiple angles. And I think that's a problem. I think too many people will pick their one lens and not ever accept other viewpoints. And I guess my larger point is just, you need to be a little bit more, people need to be more open when they're criticizing, and then when they're accepting other people's criticisms, critiques of film and TV and art in general.
Man, I hope when you guys talk about Joker in this segment, please, one of you throw down.
Joker hasn't come up yet?
I feel like both views would be hot takes.
Joker hasn't even come up yet?
It hasn't, yeah. Well, because I don't think either of our takes are that hot, because...
It depends on how much Themo actually liked it.
I really do.
Because a lot of people are...
Yeah.
A lot of people... I don't know anyone who's like, B minus.
Yeah. But I just feel like the average take on that movie is in the middle, and you guys are taking kind of extreme sides.
I think it's a reverse bell curve.
Yeah.
And I'm on the left of that bell curve, and Thema's on the right of that bell curve.
Oh, man.
Something you said about, if you look at Game of Thrones last season from like a feminist standpoint, or another way would be like kind of a more... including kind of race and class. It reminds me of something we talk about around history a lot, is like, we're not arguing about two separate views of history. Like, if you compare the great man angle of history to like the people's history of the United States, the people's history of the United States isn't presenting a separate set of facts. Mm-hmm. One term we're using is inclusive history. It's an inclusive view of history. It's history that's not just centered on one single guy. It's inclusive to include all these other voices. I think it's kind of like that. Like, there's a way to include, like, you can include perspectives and like,
right,
the, you know, historical, social, and cultural like realities of everything into your critique. That just kind of reminded me of that.
And I feel obligated to point out that I think the Daenerys arc makes sense, because I'm looking at it from those other vantage points. I'm not saying that Game of Thrones didn't have tons of issues with regards to
female
characters. I thought it was more just that it was completely rushed, that whole last season.
Yeah.
Her arc does make sense. It happened real quick.
I remember when we talked about it, saying that
the trajectory
of her arc makes sense, just the slope of the curve is too sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we... Because I think we talked a lot about it.
Yeah. I'd also be curious to see, like, someone... talk about this movie, or talk about, as if it's a movie, talk about the show, like, because we had to wait so long to see this end happen. Like, if you watched all of the show in its entirety, like, back to back to back, how it would feel.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know.
It'd probably feel terrible because it's like 60 hours long. You'd be real sleepy.
Sir, what would be your first?
Your first of three hot takes.
I'm still not sure what my third one will be.
Well, then what's this one?
Well, I was thinking about Joan of Arc a few weeks ago. It was on one of our like recent episodes.
I remember you saying it, I meant to watch...
Oh, The Messenger is better than...
I meant to watch Messenger because I want to argue with you, but I can't since I haven't seen The Messenger.
Do you mean that you wanted to argue with me and yet then you remembered that you had a lot more fun watching The Messenger?
I've never seen The Messenger.
1999. The story of Joan of Arc, directed by Luc Besson.
Yeah.
Starring Jovovich.
Yeah.
John Malkovich's in it, Faye Dunaway, Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
As the conscience.
Compared to
Marie,
this black and white movie that, like, I don't even remember. It was so boring.
Maria Falconetti.
Who is that? Like, what else is she in?
Nothing. That's all she needed to be. That's all she needed to be.
She's not even in anything.
I know her name from a sole performance.
Do you know who Dustin Hoffman is?
Nope.
Wow, right, okay.
I just know him from his running career.
I've never
that is such a great joke, and nobody acknowledged it.
There's like movies that are quote unquote technically better. Like, she acts really well, yeah. She gets burned at the stake. I'm really just over this whole, it's from a certain era, or it's French, or it's silent. So it's automatically better. Or it's directed by Carl Theodore Dreyer. I mean, Luc Besson directed a lot of great movies.
I love his stuff. I haven't seen
some of them are Passion, fucked up. Passion of Joan of Arc is in some ways, I'm sure.
I'll sub this out as one of my hot takes, but I haven't seen The Messenger, but I also have not seen a Luc Besson movie that I didn't think was good.
That you didn't think was
good? That I thought was good.
All right, that's what I thought you meant to say.
Yeah,
I respect that take on it more than.
Have you seen Wasabi?
Just this automatic thing that this is the best movie ever made. Because frankly, I just don't think it is. Maybe that's my actual hot take.
The Passion of Joan of Arc. Next?
Yeah, it's not the best movie ever made. Absolutely,
I don't think it's. You're right that it's not literally the best movie ever made.
It's not even the best Joan of Arc movie ever made. Is my actual is how
that's,
I
that,
feel.
That would be more of a hot take.
That's my hot take.
Are you talking about the Robert Bresson movie?
There's like
movie,
people
the
getting
of Joan
smashed
of
with maces, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
I don't think the first one has that.
He does color in such a distinct way.
Is that Luc Besson?
Yeah. I don't know. I really like his use of color.
Yeah, Leon the Professional's messed up. So is The Fifth
that
Element.
One does,
yeah,
fifth,
like
Fifth Element.
Looking at the other movies he's made, they're not that great. Maybe he just had like, maybe a passion overtook him. And
the passion of Luc Besson. Well, it did overtake him, per reports.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's true. Yeah, I'm actually on his Wikipedia page right now.
Yep.
What? So, yeah. Do I want to know?
Not a nice guy.
No. Really. Not a nice guy at all.
No, it's what you think. Yeah. No, I think Passion of Joan of Arc. I think Passion of Joan of Arc is a great film. It's not in my, top tier, but, incredibly influential. I think that Maria Falconetti performance is unbelievable. And just something about the stripped-down aesthetics of the movie, where it's mostly just her face in a white background. They actually, when they made that movie, I think they painted the walls pink, even though it's in black and white, so that the white would look a little bit different somehow.
I think people were uncomfortable with the idea that the Joan of Arc that Jovovich portrays is really portrayed as just this uneducated woman that is overtaken with these visions, partly because she can't read. She can't read and write. Yeah. And usually if you're like raised in that kind of oppressive society, then yeah, you might, you turn to religion for your freedom.
Might I recommend a different Dreyer movie called Odette?
That's another one that played at a movie theater I used to work at.
Did you see
it? It was the greatest movie ever made. And I was like,
you watched it?
I watched some of it because I had to program that one in.
Did you watch the end of it?
No, I didn't see the end of it.
Okay. I would recommend watching the
entire
thing. That's fair.
That's fair. However, I'm still like, I was underwhelmed by a lot of those movies.
Yeah, I love that movie. That movie is like a top 25-er for me. The end of that movie is maybe the greatest ending to any movie I've ever seen.
That sounds like a hot take to me.
No, it's not. They quoted me on Film Spotting because I wrote in about it when they talked about it.
Did they really quote you?
Yeah.
Are you on the box?
No, in Film Spotting. The podcast Film Spotting does not have a box.
Oh.
I was thinking Filmstruck.
That's what I was thinking too. I was like,
no,
there's film too spotting. Many film things.
Well, Nick, what's your...
Oh, I just...
You just did this.
I did mine.
What hot takes around?
Yeah. I'm next.
Eva looks like she has thoughts on this, or no.
Or she's just holding it. She's holding and not breathing.
Am I reading too much into your overall face?
Maybe.
Okay. Kyle was turning.
Took my microphone. So. I guess I'll just not talk.
Reading my girlfriend's face. my next is just I don't think The Shining is that scary. The movie. I haven't read the book, but yeah.
We don't read books here.
We don't.
See, you didn't think the scene where
the only thing that it was more creepy than anything was the woman. Him whole embracing.
I was just gonna say, like, just because of how like the suspense that's set up in that scene is probably that one, and then like the maybe
come and play with us, Kyle.
Every time, so Charlie's been kind of sick on and off, and every once in a while she'll say something and she'll lose her voice, and I ask her every single time to say Red Rum.
Red Rum. Charlie is in here, Mrs. Torrance.
That's no, awesome, dude.
I guess it's not. I mean, you can't judge someone for not being scared of something. But man,
yeah, it
makes me feel
bad. It has been a while. Like, I mean, I don't know why Paranormal Activity. It's just like it hit me like way too hard. But yeah, that. I mean, I saw The Shining and The Exorcist like fairly recently. Not like.
Well, when did you watch 10,
15 years ago. I probably watched The Exorcist for the first time within the last 2 or 3 years.
Had you already had kids then?
I don't think I had Charlie yet.
Just go back. go back and watch it again. I'm serious. Go back and watch it one more time.
That movie is about the fear that that something is going to... Well, either
it's the same with The Babadook. You kind of have to...
Yeah. And I watched The Babadook before Charlie, too.
Scared the heck out of me.
Yeah.
And I don't have any... kids yet.
I think The Babadook scared me just from remembering I was like kind of a scary kid like that. Like,
oh,
I was,
really?
Yeah, I was just afraid of things when I was a kid. So just that sense of this kid with all this anxiety, really. And the parent thing was just like...
I just feel like both of those movies are seen as two of the most terrifying movies like of all time. And I'm like, I don't know.
I think The Shining...
It's also just it's been a while since a movie is genuinely like freaked. Like The Orphanage, I don't think is very scary either. It's like I don't know.
If I'm going into battle, I want Kyle behind me.
The scary movie battle. I am dead inside when it comes to fear. I'm not dead inside when it comes to things that make me cry like a little baby.
Oh, dude, I can't. I was watching this new show called Primal Out. That's probably going to be if we have recommendations.
Happy crying is a real thing now. Like,
oh, yeah.
That never was a thing for me before.
I'll tear up. Like, you know, it's about this caveman and his relationship with this T-Rex, and they both lose their kids.
Oh.
It's Tartarovsky's new animation.
Who's Tartarovsky? I don't know.
Jodorowsky?
No. Gendy. Dune? Then the guy who did Dexter, Powerful Girl, Samurai Jack.
Oh yeah.
I was tearing up at that.
That's awesome.
Like, wow, this caveman just lost his little cave kids.
That would be your next hot take.
If you climb Mount Everest for fun, you're an asshole.
Yes, I love it.
It is.
Yep.
You're putting yourself at risk, and you're putting everyone who cares about you in a position that you do not need to be in.
You're spending a pile of money and generating a pile of garbage.
Yeah, and I
didn't even think about going like non-pop culture for these.
Fucking, I don't know if we can swear on this.
Oh, we can and we do.
We have people who are fucking dying for your hobby. You're an asshole. That's all. Know that if you're listening to this and you've climbed Mount Everest for fun, you're an asshole.
You're making it sound like the people that go with them don't have a choice. Is that what it is?
Well, they're an employer.
I don't really know.
What's the choice when your entire local economy has been destroyed and you can only make money off tourists?
So you don't choose your own crew. You like go. I know nothing about the way
that it works is that you have too much money, and you're an idiot, and you have no empathy. You also don't care about your family.
This is like a polar opposite of your first lukewarm take.
Because this actually gets me really upset because we have like, there's so much to be afraid of in the world, and the worst thing in my experience is losing someone you care about. So what these, again, assholes are doing is putting themselves in a situation where for no reason they go over. Usually they'll hire like a company. So a company that runs these things,
mm-hmm.
that company will hire Sherpas who are
the local
Nepalese individuals who, because they don't have other resources, will walk up with these individuals to these high altitudes. But at those altitudes, there's no your body doesn't acclimate to the way you would like at Denver, right? Yeah. Like you can't acclimate to it. So you have people who are having flash pulmonary edema, drowning at the top of Everest. You have individuals who usually are dying on the way down. There's a place called Rainbow Valley where if you look down, you see all the brightly colored jackets of people who have fallen to their death. And if you die up there just from exhaustion, you stay up there because the air is so thin you can't carry them back. So you're
also, just to give listeners some background on Sithema, what do you do for a living?
I'm a hospice doc.
Thank you. I just, you know, there's some real professional experience behind this that I think the listeners need to understand kind of the context here. Like, this is a great take.
So is it mostly, it's mostly rich, horrible people as opposed to like the marathon runners who'd want to test themselves.
I don't know what the demographics are, but you have to have like enough expendable income to...
Yeah.
Travel to Nepal. And then, like, if things get backed up, that's when people really die. So you'll make it to the top, but your oxygen and your just stamina runs out because every step, your heart's beating a mile a minute.
Yeah.
And it's like, again, dying is like losing a loved one's the worst thing. And not only you're putting your family at this position, which, sir, that's a big part of why I'm feeling this way.
Mm.
And then on top of that, to take advantage of the local individuals that. Exploiting them and putting them in a position where they can die because you're, you know.
Yeah, there's just been a huge increase of people who don't have the same physical athletic ability that the climbers used to have. Sure. Now they're like, well, I have $30,000, so I can buy all this equipment. I can buy all this oxygen. I can pay these people to carry my stuff for me.
Yeah.
And people are dying in traffic jams.
That's exactly it.
But they're just like in line.
They get overbooked. They get overbooked. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
And it's gross.
Yeah.
It's been gross for a long time, but now it's gross in a way where there's like, garbage and corpses where you can
they use corpses as landmarks now, like Green Boots is one of the hikers that died up there. You know that you're at this point away from the mountain.
He is now the checkpoint.
Human body, because again it's too, you can't move people from there anyhow.
But that guy, asshole.
I'm sure it's what he would have wanted, though. He would love to know that he's a marker on Everest.
But I mean, like, this is my point, though, is that that guy is a young, healthy dude who did not... I don't know if he was healthy. I don't know his backstory. But my point is that he was healthy enough to fly to this country and climb a mountain.
Mm.
And now his family is dealing with the loss of this... I think he's like in his 30s like or 40s, like of this young guy for no reason. Like his mom's probably still alive. His dad's probably still alive. Maybe. I don't know. But anyhow,
Thema wants people to do
better. Gosh, Thema, man.
Sorry.
I'm a fan of this hot take. I think people should really consider that kind of thing.
Don't climb Everest. Hot take. Eva.
My next hot take is that movies are too goddamn long.
Ooh.
Snap, Nick. That's fired directly at you. Directly at your ear holes.
It's not. I watched a movie called I watched a movie called Shazam on the airplane.
Yeah, the superhero one.
It's entertaining. It's fun. I think Zachary Levi is a very charming actor. That movie is also over 2 hours long. Why? That movie could have been a tight 85 minutes.
Most of them should be. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that we're justifying ticket prices by saying, well, yeah, but I'm there for 2.5 to 3 hours, so I'm really not spending that much, or it's cheaper than going out to dinner, or it's cheaper than doing this. And so we have all of these films where, you know, when we get like sequels that everybody goes, oh, it was too long, or, you know, it was bloated, there's too much stuff happens. Plenty of those movies, if we shaved them down to 80 to 90 minutes, the way cheap movies used to be, the way like drive-in movies were, they were enjoyable. And even though, they were kind of dumb, or the characters weren't that great, but yeah, it was still only like 1.5 hours long. Now it's almost twice that.
How long is City of God?
It's only that long.
I thought it was like, it's over 2 hours though, right?
Yeah, except it's good.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I'm not saying there needs to be a time limit on all of them. However, I think
too many movies are too long.
But yeah,
pattern?
Isn't there like a?
It's 2 hours 10. I mean, that's like the first act of a Marvel movie.
That's my thing. Yeah. Like a Marvel movie is 2.5.
You don't and it's a movie hours. For children.
Yeah, but
children,
I mean,
who are medicated.
Children are medicated.
I thought Infinity War was all right. I liked Endgame a lot more.
Same.
And I think it's because it needed it needed to be that long.
It earns the length, I think.
Yeah.
More than
Infinity War is way too
Infinity War drags.
But did they actually make did Coogler actually release a long cut of Black Panther? But that was just a rumor.
They had an original like 4 hour, 4.5 hours.
But people were losing their mind before they even knew what Black Panther was. They just wanted that movie just because Coogler was talented.
World building and getting to explore more of that world, I'd be down.
Yeah, it's hard for me to judge the Marvel movies as regular movies. I know it's not like I don't. I actually did not read
maybe the Scorsese.
This is my hot take. I don't know.
Yeah. You didn't read Scorsese?
No, I didn't read that opinion that him and Coppola had. I kind of just. Like, from the gist of it, like what I read on Twitter from there, like,
is this your hot take?
I read, no, not really. Right. It's about to be blended with mine though, because mine's really bad. It just seemed like the point they were making was that they're not quote unquote cinema, that they are kind of derivative works, so that maybe we should expect a different, you know, like they remind me personally more like the serials.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, well, people didn't judge serials by the same standards that they used to judge films. I don't think we can judge, like, even with you guys talking about Infinity War and Endgame, I actually felt like it was so hard for me to differentiate, like, one is better than the other. Because, honestly, like, they're not meant to be watched alone. We kind of have to admit that.
They're just one. Like, they put a stop in the middle.
So that's kind of like, that's half of my hot take, is that I didn't read Scorsese or Coppola opinions, however, they're probably right.
I think their point is that it's not a value judgment. Like he wasn't making a value judgment. It was an aesthetic judgment, which I think is fine.
Yeah,
like it's reasonable.
And I think that is one of my opinions. Is that I think we need to judge them on a different idea, because like they're based on these like almost 100-year-old franchises by now. Like let's be honest, like a Superman movie isn't just the same as like, you know. Silence. Yeah. It's not the same story. It's not even trying to do the same thing.
The stuff that happened in Silence predates Superman.
You get what I mean, though.
We're going to have an episode of On the Rocks probably in a few weeks about like video games and whether they need to be fun, quote unquote, to be like enjoyable. And it sounds similar where movies, there are entertaining movies, and then there's like, let me come up with our lists of like your favorite movie or like good movies. Mm-hmm. And like, movies that are just exciting or movies that can like John Wick. I don't know why I said fucking. John Wick and everything, how like that movie's not going to win. I mean, it might win like special effects awards, but it's just the straight up entertaining. Edgar Wright movies too. They're like just straight up entertainment.
Sin City is a good example of that too.
But
like,
it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even a comic book movie like that though is a little. Like, I don't want listeners to think I'm saying all comic book movies need to be viewed differently. I just think, like, you know, a one shot, like, if they ever make Frank Miller's Heart,
it is
going to be different.
Sin City's definitely like an auteurist,
I
think what's tough is now that the Dark Knight exists, where that movie, like, kind of blends both of, like,
being,
I don't know, but
I do think that. Well, we almost say this every generation, that like a good Batman product will come out, and then all the things that like the derivatives of that kind of ruin Batman again for everybody. Like they feel like, well, after all these sequels have come out, or all these things have come out in addition to the Dark Knight, it's kind of terrible now.
Well, like Eva, you always say about, I'm probably, if I misquote you, please correct me. But it's like, there's, it's not an invalid thing to like any of this stuff. Like,
yeah, like, I don't think that things need to be art or need to be good or cinematic in order to be enjoyable or to be, you know, that we can talk about them and say that we enjoy them. Like, that's, a, you know, that's kind of what Sir was saying too. Like,
yeah,
the problem is that we have a group of people who apparently are very serious, staunch defenders of these films, and despite the billions of dollars that they've generated, somehow one old man, saying that they weren't that, you know, they weren't that great, and all of a sudden everybody's got a...
He really just said, like, I tried watching a couple, they weren't for me, and everyone loses their minds.
Was anybody making them for Martin Scorsese?
Right. Great point.
Yeah, and that, I mean, Scorsese didn't, at least in all the, I read his New York Times article, and I read a couple of other, his other, like, longer interviews. He doesn't seem to be saying that, like, any of the stuff that people are trying
did he say that they're not cinema?
He said they don't belong in the house of cinema.
Yeah. By
house of cinema, I don't think he really meant theater.
He didn't mean theater. What he means is...
And almost, it feels like that's what people felt, like he's being exclusionary. I do think that he's making a point that's kind of valid.
Yeah, he's saying cinema as in, like, capital C cinema. Yeah. Not a cinema.
Yeah, and I think, I really think that we can enjoy... I think that we really need to address this whole comic book, like, universe and these derivatives of, like, these long-running franchises, because... Yeah. I think it actually does them a disservice to judge them the same way you would judge a movie that is quote unquote cinema. Because I really think that Infinity War Endgame is a perfect point to me. If you just watch one of the, if you give somebody one of two films and you say, hey, watch one, pick which one's better, that's impossible. Yeah. Like, they're literally designed to be viewed together. So it's kind of like, I think.
It
gets me because those fans don't realize that, like, if they would follow this to the logical conclusion, they could actually defend themselves better, like, you know, in a more effective way. Like,
if you read those movies as miniseries or a TV show that they showed in a theater, I think it would be read much differently. And
yeah, I think we need, and you know, we've really. For some reason, we got rid of this idea of cereals as being a thing. They're cereals. We need to bring that category back. Yeah. They're just like cereals.
But I just am wondering, like, as the creator of those movies, and I think one of them, like, said that they looked up to Scorsese as a director and have now him say don't. Straight up say, well, no, but just to have someone say, like, what you are doing isn't what you are trying to do.
It was Gunn, wasn't it?
It was James Gunn comparing himself to Scorsese being picketed for The Last Temptation of Christ by an entire church.
Yeah.
So a group of people who knew who knew a character from a story and said, you're doing the wrong thing with it, is the same thing as a viewer of a movie saying, I didn't really like that movie.
Yeah. Is a 73-year-old man going, It wasn't for me.
That's the only time where somebody had the choice to see themselves as a persecuted Christ and chose that somehow being Scorsese in that role was worse.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? Because, like, I feel like Gunn represents a lot of the, or just that whole thing of, like, soft-skinned millennials.
Okay, boomer.
Isn't he supposed to be like the generation that's saying that all the millennials are soft skinned? Because Gunn's like Generation X, right?
Yeah, he's a Gen Xer.
Yeah,
he was 15 when Last Temptation of Christ came out. Right. Maybe
it's like, dude, relax. It's not that big of a deal. Like, I love how personally he took it. Like, wow.
You know what this reminds me of is when Ebert was like, video games will never be art, and he got all this backlash from the video game community, and then eventually he had to post a blog post, and the title of it was, okay, kids, go ahead and play on my lawn. And it was just him saying, I'm not going to engage with this anymore, but okay, fine. Yeah. So it could be art. Like, of course, I disagree with that in a big, bad way, but also, why would I be, like, trying to have this argument with Ebert?
Yeah.
I
guess that's a guy. That's my hot take. My other two are the same. Raisins just don't belong in anything that's heated. Anything baked? Raisins don't belong in there.
The only thing that raisins belong in are Raisin Bran.
I thought you were going to say the trash.
No,
no,
no. Oh. No, they are surprisingly pretty vital in Raisin Bran.
Oh, yeah, because otherwise you're just eating bran.
Yeah.
Come on, get out of town.
You don't want to be eating bran.
What are you, somebody Scorsese's age?
I'm totally
trying to watch a Marvel movie.
I'm totally are you putting these raisins in my room? Where we are in the thing.
It's on my number two.
It's on Nick's second. Number two.
My second, this is a quick one. I think the two worst characters on Parks and Rec are Andy Dwyer and Tom Haverford. Andy Dwyer, he's fun the first time you watch it because he has like some funny one-liners, but he's an idiot. And sometimes they try to make him appear to be charming, and he's not charming. He's just like...
He's like kind of a stalker.
Yeah, season one, he's definitely like creep factor.
Oh, yeah. He's a creep.
It's terrible. That whole trash can thing is living in the trash.
Whenever they try to make him charming and like he plays these songs on guitar, no, I don't like him.
But his faces are so good. So
Mouse Rat, not into it.
So reductive of the actual.
Tom Haverford is just annoying. He's a person that I don't like spending time around on screen. I would hate him in real life. He's terrible.
In real life.
He's terrible.
I feel like he represents a lot of like when we were kids. I feel like Tom Haverford is a character that we like maintained existed somewhere. we felt like we were against just that wannabe corporate kind of.
Yeah. Give me more John Ralphio, less Tom Haverford.
John Ralphio is the worst character on the show.
Oh, hot take.
Is that your hot take?
You thought
that's not my actual hot take. Lisa tried to watch the first few minutes of his sisters on the show.
Stand up.
Oh,
it's not good.
Well, I just can't stand her really as a comedian. Apparently she spent like a few minutes just like screaming. I don't know. It sounded like she was trying to do one of the Tig Notaro.
Oh, where you just do the same.
Take a joke too far, but I don't know.
I don't like
I don't think she's very funny either on that show. Both of them.
That's
my last one.
That's the hottest take we've had so far.
No, my final hot take. I have a bunch on the side, but my final one. I think the DH is boring in baseball.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What a terrible take.
Yeah. I think the designated hitter allowing 45-year-old like out of shape guy who gets winded running to first base to play baseball.
I don't
is
know
like so boring,
baseball, and I disagree with this. Everything I understand about
that's
the
why
DH,
you disagree.
What you just watching said a, is the whole point.
Watching a pitcher strike out three times a game,
like
whatever.
Three,
but
right?
when they like hit, like when they get hits or home runs, or when you see the coach of the National League team like really need to be strategic and actually coach the game. American League, like the National League teams are way better built than American League teams. Like, American League teams are just all muscle, and if they get outpitched, then there's nothing to them.
But they don't get outpitched.
It's...
Because the National League has to take their dumb pitcher out after
it's
five
just,
innings.
It's just way more... It's
them.
Way more interesting. And in the American League, with the DH, they're not need to use the pinch hitters ever. They create players like Terrence Gore, who... stole like 50 bases but didn't even
it's awesome
but he didn't even like have an at bat because he can't swing
because he's worse than a pitcher
he can't hit to save his life. It's just so boring.
No, I love the DH.
Small ball and creating plays and doing exciting things is way more interesting than the National League.
No, small ball is terrible. Watching a pitcher try to hit is the worst thing I've ever
home runs are dull.
It makes me want to die. The National League team is...
There's so many games this year that were just home runs, and like that's all the runs that were scored.
It's because they reduced the ball this year. The National League is the only professional baseball that does not use a DH.
Yeah, I know that. But it was the original way that it was, and it should be that way.
In other countries.
When is the last time a DH won MVP?
I don't think they. In Japan, they don't.
Don't use a DH?
Right.
In Cuba, I think they did use it. Yeah, they used the DH in Cuba. I know at least in American, like all of the independent college minor leagues,
right.
They use a DH.
I just want to say
this is a Japanese baseball hat, by the way. I went to Japan for people who like don't follow our new Insta account. I went to Japan. I'm wearing the Tokyo Giants hat.
Is that awesome. Where what's his face played?
No, that's the hat I was wearing yesterday. the Nippon Ham Fighters hat, Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
See, without the DH, Shohei Ohtani would pitch And when would we see him hit? Well, he probably would have played on a National League team.
When do you see him hit?
Or he could just down. Hit. Like, he would, if he was on a National League team, it would just be normal.
Yeah, but we wouldn't get to see him rake, like, all the time.
Nah.
Rake.
No.
I guess I just feel like...
He's very tall.
From what I understand about it, the reason it's awesome is the exact... thing that Kyle opened with that makes it bad is that you get to see like a washed up old legendary player that they like drag out. This guy still got it. Like
it makes Jason, the last thing people like Jason Giambi play in the league way too long.
Yeah, it's awesome.
No, you need I like the young players who you love, Nick. That's why they are able to play more when there aren't like the stupid. I don't know. I'm not.
No, I like arguing. These old. I like these old people. Give me the old guys.
Give me the old dusty people that are boring. No,
the guys that shouldn't. How did they get medically cleared for
Nick,
this?
You need
game?
To look
they
at
it. Don't. There was a Sports Illustrated article years ago about the origin of the designated hitter and what an embarrassment it was at the time. Like players didn't want to be the. It was seen as. And I remember the one dude. He said like he ate like 4 chili dogs because he just didn't know what else to do during the game.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Well, I don't know what to
fantastic.
Do."
Fantastic. Like,
well, that's what I love about baseball.
That's where we get the term designated driver from, because it was such a like a laughing stock at the time that they would add designated to all kinds of bullshit at the time. And so the idea of going to the bar but you don't get to drink but you have to drive everybody home, you're the designated driver, like the designated hitter.
That's awesome.
That's wild, dude.
Yeah,
I love it.
I love the DH. I really do. I forget who I was talking to. I was talking to someone, and it might have been you. Somebody. I told my take that I love the DH, and they're like, "Really?"
It was probably Dad.
It might have been Dad.
Yeah. But yeah, has the DH ever won MVP? I'm going to say no.
Yeah, we can find out.
You can look it up. Thema,
but
what's your last one?
MVP is a terrible.
Out of all things,
one of your favorite players of all time is a perennial.
The
MVP.
Worst.
They're going to fight.
Is Brussels sprouts?
Brussels sprouts. My hot take is Brussels sprouts are the best vegetable.
They're the king of vegetables.
Yeah, they are the greatest vegetable.
The dukes of vegetables.
This
is the worst part about it is that you have all these Brussels sprout apologists. who refuse to acknowledge that they are excised cysts from cabbages. And they're the grossest.
Well, usually talk about what they like about Brussels sprouts. It's that they like
oil?
Caramel or burned.
Yeah.
The what is it? The Maillard reaction?
Maillard, yeah, where you get you brown something.
That's what you like. You like it roasted. You like bacon on it. You like vinegar on it. Yeah. You don't actually like the Brussels sprout.
No, but you grate them. You grate them.
No, but there's never.
I don't like the Brussels sprout. Is completely. That's completely false. Because you wouldn't have any of those things
without
the Brussels sprout leaf.
It's the
leaf of the Brussels sprout.
It's also
the most beautiful leaf.
And
when you roast this thing,
it's like
melts
saying,
in your mouth. Like,
it sounded an awful lot like Trump, man. It's a good leaf. It's the most beautiful leaf.
I've
never
seen
it's
leaf. A great
it's
leaf.
It's the best leaf.
It was the perfect leaf.
Have you seen these leaves?
Everyone's saying that the leaves, people have been saying that these leaves are great.
Eva. Oh, I don't feel like, I mean.
He's not done.
He took the money. No, I mean, we already said that they are the best vegetable. There is no vegetable that is better than Brussels sprouts.
I don't agree with that, but I of the hot takes, I am much closer to Kyle's side. Brussels sprouts are incredible. I can't even say it in English. That's how good they are.
What I think is weird is that when people don't like Brussels sprouts, it's not that they like they don't love them. It's that they despise them. Like, Dad.
Yeah, my
he'll eat anything. He like gags when he eats Brussels sprouts, and I'm like, they're not gross. They just taste like, they pretty much just taste like cabbage.
Like
just
like someone bite size. Concentrated and delicious cabbage.
Do you like regular cabbage?
Yes,
but you think
he doesn't want to fit a whole one in his mouth?
No, they look like alien pods. Like if I eat one. We'll be in a John Carpenter movie.
Do you like mushrooms?
Cronenberg. Oh, love mushrooms. Man.
Do you know what those look like?
Like Donald Trump's. Per Stormy Daniels.
Oh, Lord.
I don't think she compared it to a literal mushroom. I think it was the
Toad
Mario Kart. Which means he was wearing a diaper then, right?
I think she said Toad from Mario Kart, not just the Mario franchise, but specifically Mario Kart.
Specifically Mario Kart, yeah.
When he gets drunk.
Not the floating one in Mario 2.
Mario 2. Was he floating? No.
Didn't he float in Mario 2?
That was Princess Peach.
Didn't he hover?
That was Princess Peach.
Mm.
Was he? I don't know if he's playable. Was he playable?
He was playable.
He definitely was.
I know she picked up like turnips.
He was short. I don't know what he
was. Was he faster? Is that what you wanted to be? Yeah.
No, Luigi was fast.
But he had the wiggle when he jumped.
Yeah, he would kick his feet.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think we've all agreed that Brussels sprouts are good.
Nope.
Moving on.
Well, I got bad news for probably
we should have done. We should have done that from the beginning. Is like hold we on, all we one. All raid on if it's a hot or like if we agree or don't agree, but it's too late now.
Well, I think it kind of happened naturally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is going to be bad news for. I'm betting at least two of you.
No, don't say.
Fuck Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh.
What? Is this your number one?
It's number one.
Just a terrible take.
Calvin and Hobbes.
See, I enjoy it. Life. I don't think it was a part of my childhood like it was Nick.
I feel like Nick and I were probably on the same level as far as like Calvin and Hobbes fandom for the early 90s, it seems like.
And then
I realized like
she had a bad
here's what I didn't experience. Get. And this is like tying into like my whole life arc of like wrestling with being a cool girl. Or, like, how do I, like, navigate, like, liking things that girls don't like?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Why did I identify with Calvin?
I don't know. You tell me that.
Because the comic strip did. And, like, why didn't I like Susie? Why didn't I want to be Susie? And it's just shitty. And especially, like, once they started, like, inserting Trump into the comic strip. Did you see those?
Oh, well, you can't.
No, I can, and I did. And, like, think about, like, this wasn't really that great. That wasn't a really great thing for me to aspire to or a person that I really wanted to be like. Like, no, it's just, not good.
But would you want to be like Hobbes?
No.
Why not?
So you wanted to be Hobbes.
So Calvin is like
pushed around. Wasn't he pushed around a lot?
No. Calvin gets pushed around. Calvin is like the main character who has like a very wild imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And Hobbes is like his superego. He's like the conscious of
occasionally.
Very often. Like if you look at a lot of his opinions on ethics and mortality and environmentalism. I mm-hmm. think the comic strip is really progressive in terms of its depiction on environmentalism, especially in a time like the late 80s and early 90s, when it wasn't really a hot topic. It's very like anti-commercial, anti-capitalist, which I think is cool. I like Hobbes. It's a great relationship.
I wish I had a better connection. I bet if Mike was here. He would have.
Flipped, I feel like if flipped Mike his was wig. Here, yeah, he would have probably done a backflip.
Yeah, he probably would have flipped this table. Actually, it's probably good. Good that he's not here.
He totally lost it.
I would flip the table, but I don't think I have the strength.
I was never a big fan of it. Never really spoke to me.
I've never actually read it, but a couple of the things really. That you brought up have made me want to read it over the years. Speaking frankly,
really,
but again, I haven't.
No, I think it's very good. What is it about that, like, what's holding you back? Just that he's kind of...
What do you mean? He's just bad. He's a jerk. He thinks he's smarter than everyone. He's mean to Susie. He has a very, like, overinflated sense of, like, that his ideas are better, that things that he does are better. He's, you know, he messes things up for his parents.
But I think if the comic strip was just Calvin... then that may be true. But I think having Calvin and Hobbes...
You think Hobbes is the balancing factor of that?
Hobbes is the jelly to that peanut butter, man. Like, you need them both.
You're supposed to identify with Hobbes. That essentially, as a kid, you're supposed to be... You think his point was to... That Calvin is somebody to not aspire to be?
No, I think I don't know that you're necessarily supposed to aspire to either of them, but, I mean, Calvin is, like, a very opinionated and brash six-year-old. And Hobbes is the other side of that coin.
So which one does Dwayne The Rock Johnson play, and which one does Jason Statham play?
Does it matter, really?
Well, yeah.
I thought they were like the same person.
Yeah.
I was doing a
joke because Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah.
Oh, that. Oh,
I just didn't want
that. I got you.
I honestly didn't get it because I forgot that they
Nick
were
was too caught up in trying to defend Calvin.
I approve of this hot take. I think it was spicy.
That was spicy.
It's spicy.
Which I'm glad. Please, I'm so glad we don't use that on the show at all. Do we use
ghost spicy? Started.
Ghost peppers are spicy, but I'm not going to eat one.
I'm not
touching the ghost pepper.
Well, I think we gotta get to Sirs because I think that's what Themo's waiting around for.
Yeah.
Oh well, Themo, you have to stick around for at least the beginning of my baseball question because you'll really like it.
I have a lineup, but I saw this briefly. I wanted to hear it.
Essentially,
oh yeah.
I was at a theological symposium last week, believe it or not, and one of the things I found out about was this guy William R. Jones. And he wrote this book called Is God a White Racist? A Preamble to Black Theology, which James Cone, the founder of Black Liberation Theology, said was one of the most important critical assessments of Black Theology, one of the most widely regarded. Blah, blah, blah. So I got to thinking. So the whole idea behind this is that if we solely look at God's actions, this is based on this thing written in 1979. Just look at his actions and what he says, we can surmise that if you consider the Hebrew chosen race thing, all the genocide, support of slavery in the New Testament, that God is either, if he's real, he would have to be racist. If he's not racist, he's not all powerful and therefore not God. Yeah. So it's kind of this
I'm argument. Okay with you calling God racist. I'm worried about the other part.
Worried about where this is going. So I got to thinking. So if we look at some other very popular figures, and if we look at specifically the reality of Batman's actions, and that we see that pretty much his entire he supports and forces, he draws his entire identity from the entire structure of oppression, which is banking, militarism, technology. He's constantly patrolling in low crime criminal areas. Basically, if God is real, then God is racist. And if God is racist, then Batman is racist, is my hot take.
Man, this is something I've not even. I appreciate the I'm talking about racism with it. It's something that I've struggled with for a long time. Not so much the racism specifically, but he's targeting criminals who are literally trying to get food in their mouth. If you're thinking about it.
And so there's this whole thing. For one, I mean, the idea racism, so we're really talking about systemic racism. The idea of this individual, everybody is kind of affected by sexism, for example, because we're in a sexist culture. I'm not specifically saying that Batman maybe goes to sleep and imagine how much he hates, right?
Yeah.
However, I will say though that he is comfortable with this idea of blackness and criminality and poverty all being the same thing. And so a friend of mine, Diallo, he talks about how Batman isn't fascist, which is a good point, because people kept saying The Dark Knight or other movies, Batman has these fascist tendencies. He really doesn't, because he doesn't lie to the people. He includes women in his inner circle, which those two things, no.
He does have the weird surveillance thing in The Dark Knight.
He does have this surveillance thing.
But he destroys it.
Yeah. If you even use that kind of similar logic, though, he would probably still be identified as racist, because his continued focus on crime rather than trying to tear down the structures that cause crime.
Yeah.
And he's never taken on a black protege. And that was something that I had never actually thought of until thinking about this. He doesn't. He's got Lucius
in
Fox.
Any iteration?
Lucius Fox kind of works for him.
Have you read Batwing at all?
And so I actually, in our group thread, I wrote that because I was this is going to be Thomas' argument.
Well, that and Batman Incorporated.
I do know about Batwing.
Yeah.
And Batman Incorporated. However, I'm looking at things that are
Main story.
I'm looking at the juice of what we know of Batman's history.
Yeah, sure.
The reality is that those are really late characters. They're not really that close to him. One of them's a flat out shoo-in because it's Lucius Fox's kid.
Yeah.
The other one is this new guy, the Signal, who's a black protege. Mm-hmm. It's just if Batman spends all this time in the inner city beating up, people. Yeah. Then you would think he would run into more troubled black or Latinx or even Asian or some other kind of youth other than only
just surrounding himself with white people in his inner circle until, you know, ABP, as I call it, after Black Panther, which anything that was written after Black Panther that has a black character by DC or Marvel, like
after
they're taking advantage of it. ABP.
You're saying the publication of Black Panther?
Yeah, I just feel like after 2016, like if somebody's like, oh, well, he has the signal now, it's like, I think that,
but yeah,
you know, this modern era, it's a little
cash grabby.
Yeah, it's a little cash grabby.
So I can't argue any of that, man.
Batman's racist. It sucks. And you know, one of my primary, like one of the best works done on this was SNL's Chance the Rapper's sketch.
I haven't this year's.
It's like
I haven't watched.
It's like 2017 or 2018. He does this amazingly brilliant sketch where it's Bruce Wayne's giving out turkeys and like these black people show up and they're like, that's what they start talking about. Why is he always in our neighborhood? Like, like, you know, so-and-so just stole like a loaf of bread and he broke his jaw in two places. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
He got hung off a building.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that.
So there's been some things that led to this, and yeah, that's my hot take. I'm probably gonna write a Medium article on it by the time this, because I'm already like halfway done with it by the time this is out. So listeners, if you go by Medium, when this comes out, it's probably on there. Whatever that Medium is, I think it's like medium.com/searching or something.
I have to say that "What If God Was Racist" is my favorite Joan Osborne song.
Songs were made by other people. Go. What if God was racist?
Kyle, I'm gonna Kyle to the bottle.
I'm drinking.
Like, not touching this. Well, that's my hot take.
Do I want to end with a like super hot take that's going to agitate that one before he leaves?
Yes.
Or do I just want to say that the marvelous Mrs. Maisel is not marvelous? It's a bad show.
No, you may not. I agree with you.
Yeah, it's bad.
Ooh, double.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It's a show about it's an Amazon show about a woman who becomes a stand-up comedian. And the best criticism of the show, I forget who said this, but she does the show. We're doing stand-up a lot, and the scenes where she does well and the scenes where she bombs are indistinguishable. Like, in terms of the content of her performance, it's like the jokes are the same quality.
How about delivery?
Yeah, it's the same. Like, she's just not funny.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, my real number one is that The Last Jedi is the best Star Wars movie, but the actual hot take is that that is not a hot take because
it's just fact.
It's wildly accepted.
So are you saying best Star Wars movie of the new ones or whole
of all time?
Franchise?
He's saying of all time.
He said it.
I don't know how much I believe saying of all time, but
no,
I'm gonna.
No, he says all time. You should. Or,
tell you what, let's just meet in the middle. We'll agree that it's better than Firefly.
Fair. Snap.
Fair.
All right. We seal it with a handshake.
I would say in the how many Star Wars? Well, there's Solo and Rogue One. If you're counting
Solo,
those,
Solo, Rogue One. Wasn't there another one?
Rogue Two.
No. I thought there was another.
So what is that? 10 movies.
10 because the 10? Last one has come out.
The Last Jedi is definitely in the bottom half of those movies.
I concur.
And you saying it's at the top is. You know, it's disgusting. Honestly.
Sir, back me up, please.
I don't know if it's at the top, Nick. Like,
I mean, Empire Strikes Back.
He took it too far.
We knew too much.
Yeah, I think too much. I think it's it being at the top is really strong.
All right, towards the top then.
No.
Yeah,
you.
It's at the top.
Is it the top?
It's at the top.
There we go.
It's not. Yeah. It's not even the best.
Yeah. It's the you say it's the Covenant
of the
Star Wars
of the episodic episodes 1 through 8. It's not even the best of the last two that were released.
Yes. Oh, I think it's wildly bad.
Yeah.
The Force Awakens is so. High five, please. Okay, I wasn't sure if you were high fiving or
trying
if you were,
to. Okay, and then I didn't have this.
The Force Awakens was so special, despite the story still being
it's not
the same.
That's the thing about the Force Awakens is not special. The Force Awakens feels very cookie cutter.
It's not as special as the race scene in The Last Jedi in a casino. That's special.
That was special.
My issue with and flying Princess Leia, that's pretty special.
I like flying Princess Leia. I will give you one thing that I don't like, and it's everything that whatever it is that Benicio del Toro is doing in that movie is I just don't know.
It was like he wandered in from another era of his
really
career.
Is it a hot take to say he is one of my favorite characters? I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool.
That's the hottest take in the show. Yeah. No, he was awful. Like,
my take is that it should have been Jemaine.
I think that's fair.
Or Watiti.
I really like The Last Jedi. I think Empire is better, though.
I think Empire is probably better.
I think that of the new era films,
A New
Hope's, it's hard for
A New
me
Hope's
to,
good, too.
I think A Force Awakens, they're both good.
And
I felt like they were both kind of even for me. Like, I wanted...
Force Awakens. The Force Awakens is fine. I can't say that I remember much of any of it.
That's the one where Princess Leia flies through the air, right?
Last Jedi. No, that's Last Jedi.
Oh, man. Wow, The Last Jedi is great.
Yeah.
Got
him. Man, it's awesome.
Gotcha.
Star Wars back to fantasy. It's like back to like the fantasy aspect.
I didn't mind her flying through the air. I had a big issue with the casino leaving the indentured children.
Phasma's terrible. Phasma in that movie was a complete waste.
If we're recasting things with Jemaine, can I say another like?
No, you don't recast
warm
Captain
take.
Phasma.
No, can I give a warm take? It's not a hot take, but La La Land, it's all right.
With Jemaine, it would have been brilliant.
No, I don't love it, but some like Nelly can't stand it, and then some people like Ashley thinks it's like a masterpiece.
Well, the fact that it was,
let me tell you how to make it 10 times better.
Yeah,
he's redirecting. I think he's on the ropes. No. I think you're on the tropes
for 200.
Sports words.
Here's how you make it 10 times better, and tell me I'm wrong.
You recast the two leads.
No, you take Ryan Gosling
in space.
You take John Legend and you switch them.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, and I was like, "Yeah, it sounds
so much better." Yeah. It's so much better if you switch those two roles.
Yeah,
it
fixes everything.
You make,
but
you
can
make
John Legend even act? Because he was
better
bad
than Ryan Gosling.
Well, I like Ryan Gosling.
He was bad. John Legend was pretty bad,
but you make John Legend be the guy who's like the real jazz musician. Ryan Gosling is the guy who's doing like the popular, like selling out version of jazz.
Yeah, it's a lot more accurate though.
Yeah, and I don't think that Gosling and Emma Stone have much chemistry at all. Somebody described the two of them as, because they've been like
they're
paired
like
up in a couple,
like brother and sister.
Yeah, they've been paired up in a couple movies, and it's like, why are people trying to make these characters who are acting like brother and sister act like they should be sleeping together? It doesn't make sense.
I started watching that movie with my mom, and she said, Themo, because she'd seen the movie before, and she goes, Themo, it's kind of sad, but you've never been in love.
Oh my God.
No.
So I go, I'm going to go play Overwatch. I'm good.
Oh, God. Themo's mom's hot takes.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
That's just a roast.
No, the fact that that movie was, what, nominated for the Tied with the Most awards at the, not the Oscars,
it was,
mean everything, but.
It was the winner briefly.
That is it for part two of episode 200. Stay tuned. Next episode is going to be part three, in which we talk about, we do some listener feedback, we talk about some scary movies, and then we talk about this thing called The Jar. What is The Jar? What are we doing? Find out. Bye.